Welcome to the It Is Better to Know podcast.
This is Anne.
I'm Cecilia.
And I'm Valerie.
This is a podcast where we use our expertise as pharmacists to break down relevant health topics and make them easier for you to understand.
Now let's get started. You got me curious.
All right. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of It Is Better to Know. And today we're really excited to announce that we do have a guest speaker joining us today.
Yes. And if you remember from last episode about bed bugs, which is really a great episode, by the way, so please check that out if you haven't already. Cecilia and I mentioned there are dogs that are especially trained to detect bed bugs through their sensitive sense of smell. And just as a reminder, their smell receptors are 10,000 times more accurate than that of a human's.
Right. And we're honored to have Julianne with us from Seek and Find Experts, a local company in Edmonton that offers canine scent detection services for the prevention and detection of bed bugs. Welcome, Julianne.
Thank you, girls, so much for having me.
Thank you for joining us. So, Julianne, just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to start your company.
Sure. My name is Julianne, as you said, and I started my company about 10 years ago. And how I started it was my brother at the time was working for Remote Lodging up north, and they had about, I want to say, 7 lodges at the time. And bed bugs, of course, were an issue up there. All the transient workers and the traveling in and out of there, like constant, and the close proximities and sizes of the rooms, that if a bed bug problem ever did come up, they spread really quickly. So he was doing some research to find out how they could be proactive in dealing with bed bugs. And he came across the dog. And so he calls me up one day and says, "Julianne, I have a business idea for you." I said,
"Wow."
Tell me about it. Yeah. So he told me kind of what it was. And he knew that, of course, I love dogs, and I've always loved dogs. And I think that I've always been good with dogs. And he also knew that I wanted to start my own business, and I just hadn't found the right thing to do yet. So with those things in mind, he thought, I'm going to get Julianne involved in this, and it would be kind of a mutually beneficial situation, in that he could provide me some work and I could provide a service that they needed that was also very costly. So he did a bit of research for me and found a fellow who trained and sold dogs, and what local pest control companies and dog services were doing and using and what they were charging. So he did do a little cheating there for me. And so I came back with them with a real lowball quote, knowing what other quotes were. And so they knew that they were giving me a chance, and I wasn't an expert yet. And I was giving them a pretty rock bottom price compared to what other people charging, and did that for about 5 years.
Okay. Wow. That's quite the story. So I think, things just kind of lined up with your brother doing some research for you, and then you wanting to start your own business as well. So, wow, that's really cool.
It was definitely meant to be. So many branches have come into my life because of that. So many people and opportunities and experiences, and has just allowed me for an amazing lifestyle and the ability to work with dogs, which is by far the best part of it.
That's honestly my dream. So that's great.
And you mentioned that there was remote lodging, and that's sort of how the genesis of your business came to be. But are there other areas or industries that you have fanned out into that you can elaborate on?
Yeah. So we search pretty much everywhere. There are definitely places that are more common than others. For example, there are other industries that do proactive searching. Some hotels will do it proactively. Some property management companies will do it proactively in apartments. Some seniors facilities will do it proactively. Libraries will do it proactively. So there are quite a few people out there that do it proactively and know about the dogs. And then, of course, it extends into everywhere. We can search buses. We've searched courthouses. We've searched jails. We've searched homeless shelters. We've searched, there's probably nowhere we haven't searched, theaters, cars, fireman gear. We've done that before, too. So these are all industries that know the dogs exist. And some of them are definitely proactive about it. Some of them are reactive, but it's kind of depends on the facility and what their budget is and what they're prepared to do. Like with the remote lodging, when they ended the contract, it was because a bigger company took over. They bought them out. And I think what happened was they looked at these bills that were coming in and they're like, this is a really expensive service for proactive work. So they shut the contract off, which was fine. But what ended up happening was that within 2 or 3 months, they had multiple breakouts.
Okay. So this proactive work was quite good.
And it was
because
they were doing them. We were doing like quarterly checks in every single room and the maintenance had taught themselves how to treat. So with me doing all the searching, anytime we came across, and I was also on site enough because I was doing it so often that if there was any ever reports or suspicions, then I was in there like right away checking it out. And if I'm finding something, I'm finding a few in one room. And so they're able to go right in and they were doing heat treatments, which is also the best treatment. I can't speak too much to pest control and remedial stuff because I'm not in any way, shape or form certified or experienced in remedial work. My expertise lies in the dogs and training of the dogs and working with the dogs.
Right. Okay. So from a business standpoint, you mentioned, you know, there's like all these areas that you've been contacted to have dogs search for bed bugs. Like, how do you find word out about your business and what you do? Do you find like that there's more effective methods? Like, is it mostly word of mouth or do you do like any advertising, anything like that?
I don't do advertising. I'm actually, although I'm very good at what I do, I'm very good at the operational side of things. I am the worst business salesperson. I don't like asking people for things. I don't like pushing myself on anybody. I don't like negotiating. Like that is not fun for me. I don't enjoy it. I'm terrible at social media. So I'm actually the worst person to be in charge of my own.
That just means you're very reliable and trustworthy, I would think. Right. focus on the business itself, right?
Exactly. And doing the job, like that's what I love to do the most. So I definitely do more subcontracting than I do direct to client. I'll approach pest control companies because they know about the dogs. What I would love to get out to more though are just individuals like you or me. Someone who, a lot of people, they go on vacations and they travel, they worry, or they've had experience, so they worry every time they travel, or, you know, they don't know the dog exists. More times than not, anytime I tell somebody what I do for a living, they had no idea that even existed.
That was kind of like us before we did our previous episode on bed bugs. Like I had never heard of bed bug like detecting dogs before, so I thought this was a really cool idea for a podcast, and here we are. So yeah, I think I guess going back to what I was asking is, I guess if you're not really like, you know, too keen or savvy on doing a lot of advertising, then it's actually even more phenomenal that you're able to have so many industries that contact you to find bed bugs in their areas. And I think a lot of that would probably be word of mouth then. Like it's effective, they have either had like, you know, a small outbreak of bed bugs and gotten that treated quite effectively, or they just haven't had bed bugs and they know that what you're doing is working. So I guess kudos to you. That's really awesome.
Yeah, no, I this is my the law. If you had asked me 20 years ago or even 15 years ago what I'd be doing right now, and I went in a million years yeah. told you that, oh, I'm going to be using dogs to search for bed bugs.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody, you know, what? Yeah. Do you have an industry that you see like the highest rates of bed bugs? I know you mentioned quite a few, like property management and hotels and like seniors facilities, long-term care, libraries, remote lodging. Is there one in particular that you see kind of like more recurrent rates of bed bugs than the other?
I would say that pretty much those things that I said, like apartment buildings, but unfortunately more so in lower income. And that's more because the property management doesn't want to put the money into doing the canine searching or the proactive searching. So when they do okay. have a problem, it'll spread and they don't contain it fast enough or properly, also because they're looking for the, I don't want to say cheapest, but least expensive route. That's kind of where it comes, like more lower income, but definitely apartment buildings, senior residences, because they have a lot of foot traffic and visitors. And then of course, anywhere where there's transient. So hotels it could be a 5-star, 4 seasons, and they're still going to get bed bugs. It's just that their approach is going to be more, they're not going to be afraid to spend the money to be proactive or to treat properly.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah. Like you can be the cleanest person in the world and still get bed bugs. And you might have mentioned this in your podcast, that 30% of the people don't even react.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So some people don't even know. Like, so if you have one bed bug, it could live out its entire life and you wouldn't even know. You wouldn't even know.
Right. Yeah, that was one scary fact that we had stumbled upon, and definitely kind of makes your skin crawl.
Yeah, it's horrible. And people get, like, I talk to so many people and that cry, and I feel terrible for them. And it's because they've been, and it's normally people who have had already had bed bug experiences, and it's in your head, and it's a trauma. It's an absolute trauma. And these people are just reliving it, and they're panicking and they're scared, and like just like they feel, that's the other worst thing about bed bugs, is that so many people automatically feel shame, and mm-hmm. and there's no need for that. And that's heartbreaking too, because, and that's part of the reason why they don't report it. And that's how it contributes to the problem. They don't report it because they're ashamed. Then they try to treat themselves and create, as you guys also spoke about last time, was they create these super bugs unknowingly. Yeah. They don't realize that, exactly like you said, survival of the fittest. If they make it through that self-treatment, that they're stronger. And they're going to procreate, carry on. And they're just exactly, they're like pest controls in the last 10 years are, it's getting harder and harder to treat them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
That's a scary reality. And I think that it's so important that you called out that psychological aspect of it. It's not really something that we addressed in our podcast episode about bed bugs. So thank you for pointing that out. And it's really interesting too, in particular, how you mentioned the word shame in this. And it's like, the shame of like, oh, like, how could I have let this happen? Or I'm too embarrassed to let others know about it. I'm just going to take care of this problem myself. But really, like, in the long run, it will make things worse off for everyone as a whole. So, I think it's really important that you're coming out here with that statement, so that when we, publish this episode and people hear about this, there's less of a stigma around it. So I think that's a wonderful thing that you brought up here. I wanted to get a little bit about more of the how to, or how does this work with the dogs detecting the scent of the bed bugs. So can you elaborate about that? So let's say I was curious and contacted you to have your dog sniff out whether or not my place has bed bugs. Can you walk me through what I should expect?
Sure. Yeah. So I do provide a prep sheet for people when we're going to come and do the inspection. I usually try to have I'd like to ideally have a conversation with them first, understand why they're looking for the service, what's going on, what's happened, why do they think they have bed bugs. And I can usually determine a lot from that first conversation. And then if we decide we're going to go ahead with the canine search, I ask them to not have any strong perfumes or, any strong perfumes or air fresheners on in a couple hours before we come in. Try not to have a cigarette, close all the windows, turn off any fans or heaters. Any pets need to be either out of the house or in the bathroom, because we don't typically search bathrooms. Any dog food, cat food, pet food would be up off the counter, any dog toys. And then we ask people to actually leave the residence, ask them not to be. Sometimes it's hard about the clutter and stuff. So ideally want to be able to access all the way around the bed, around the couches, anywhere that people are going to be at rest. So where they're going to be lying down for long periods of time, because that's where the bed bugs are going to be if they have any. So we just want kind of clear access to those specific areas. We do search, a pre-treatment search. If we're doing a post-treatment search, we do still want to reach like outlets and baseboards and behind furniture, somewhere where the bed bugs, if they have scattered, where we can still search for them to see if there are any left. So that's kind of the prep sheet in a nutshell of what I give people, so that they're prepared for what we're going to do when we come in. And when I use my dogs, mine are typically off leash. I just allow them. I want to be as involved in their search as little as possible. So I don't necessarily want to use a leash unless I'm concerned about their safety. I let them go and I let them follow their nose. I watch them. If I see that they've maybe missed a corner or have passed by too quickly on one spot on the bed, I'll bring them back around. My one dog that I use, I've used him since I started this. So he and I have been working together for 10 years. He knows exactly what he's doing. And to be honest, I was so new when I started this. I had no idea what I was doing. He taught me.
Aw, learning from each other. That's great.
He was such a well-trained. He was perfectly trained. I was so lucky that I got him. That he has spoiled me, because I've literally had to do nothing. I've learned a lot, obviously, but to have him as my first dog, kind of my first dog, was just I was very blessed, very lucky to come about on that.
Right. And it probably depends on each situation, but how many dogs do you typically bring to, I guess, test out a place to see if they have, let's say, like, if it was just a single family home, like, would you bring like a couple dogs at a time, or?
No, I could just use one dog, years with just one dog. I had two dogs in the beginning, but that's mostly because of the volume of work I was doing. So I was doing, 80 to 100 rooms a day at the camps. Small rooms, of course, just the bed, chair, desk, wardrobe. That was it. But I wanted to be able to just continually go, instead of breaking with my dog, then I just put one away, grab the other dog, and continue going. So because of that bulk of work, two dogs were definitely required. And then I went a couple years with just the one dog, and that was plenty, because I wasn't doing that volume that I was doing more, 20 to 40 units a day, and then sometimes just one, two, three jobs a day, because I'm working with dogs, so I can't work an 8-hour day. That's just not going to happen. I'm usually working maximum 4 hours a day with these dogs.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, now I have two dogs again, because my one who's 11, who I've had since the beginning, he's slowing down. He's not as motivated as he used to be. So, and I can see that, and I never want to force. I could talk about this for days. There's a big difference in trainers and the way people treat and handle their dogs, and what they think works and doesn't work, and what their practices and procedures are with their dogs. For me, if my dog doesn't love what he's doing without depriving him of anything, then I'm not going to make it. Then I'm making him work and I'm not going to do that. So as soon as he tells me he's done, he's done. And I've got my second dog ready to go now. And she's certified and she's 2 and she's fresh and she's raring to go.
That's so cool. So you mentioned certification. So I guess, can you speak to a little bit more about that? Like, how do they get certified and what's the level of certification?
Yeah, so legally, you do not have to be certified to have a scent detection dog for bed bugs. I think that it's best practice to have your dog certified and to request that the dog you're hiring is certified by a third-party certification body. So the one that is probably one of the biggest, there are 2 of the bigger ones. The one that I use, they do a double blind certification test. So a certifier will put out hides, lures, and you have 4 rooms and up to 3 rooms. No less than 1 room will contain hides and you don't know, obviously. The certifier knows, but then you have a proctor. And so the proctor also doesn't know where the hides are. That's why they call it double blind. So nobody knows. Nobody can cue the dog. Nobody can, because dogs are so intelligent and they know their handlers. Like, they read their handlers like a book. I can read my dog like a book. My dog reads me like a book. So when I've put out my own hides, I know that there's a subconscious.
Yeah, I tell.
I'm tapping. I don't know what I'm doing, but like, you try your best not to, but that's what's the benefit of the double blind is. So that's with a company called the WDDO, the World Detector Dog Association organization, sorry. And so I've been doing that every year for 10 years. I get certified with them every year. And I don't do it with the other certification company. I'm not sure why. I was duly certified for a few years, but I just stopped doing that. It's very expensive to attend all these conferences and certifications.
That's just part of the package with being a professional, though. Hey, it's like all of this upkeep and the ongoing continuing education required from that. And when you mentioned that you choose to get certified annually for this, is this something that you have to fly out for? Is there only one certifying location in Canada, or how does that look?
So the certifiers are kind of everywhere. So there are 2 in Canada officially, and I'm one of them. So I do certifications for other people for this organization. A lot of what I did in the first 5 years when I was doing that contract work, because I didn't really have the opportunity to do any other jobs. I was so busy doing that one and I was making plenty of money. And so I really spent that time padding my resume by being involved in everything I could possibly be involved in. So I was flying all over. I was flying to Alabama, to California, to Washington, to Tennessee, to Minnesota, pretty much everyone. It was a blast. I've met so many people that like are my closest friends today. And so there are certifiers. There's one in Vancouver, then there's me, but I will travel to certify. And then there are a bunch over the US. There's, I think, one in Idaho. There's one in Washington. There's a couple over in the kind of South, Alabama, Midwest. They cover all the locations and the WDDO will, with if there are enough people to certify, the WDDO will sponsor that and pay for the certifier to go to these conferences. If people want to kind of put together a conference, WDDO will provide the certifier.
That's awesome. That's amazing. And it sounds like a lot of fun. So you've seen a lot of North America, which is amazing. I think that it's just speaking from a personal perspective, I think I only saw like LA, and that's just like the tip of the iceberg. It's not even a good representation of all of America. So you've seen real America. So I'm sure you have a lot of other stories that you could tell about, you know,
this is
which
this
are your favorite
been,
joints to eat at. And
this has been a blast. Mm-hmm. An absolute blast. I feel very lucky. Like, I feel incredibly lucky.
Yeah,
honestly,
next time
it's like a dream come true. Yeah. Yes, exactly, right? So Julianne not only gets to work with dogs, she gets to travel the world.
Yeah.
This sounds amazing. Runs your own business. Yeah.
Gets paid handsomely for it as well. So
exactly. Yeah. I think I'm going to make a career change after this.
Oh, gosh, Cecilia. Yes,
right, Valerie? Yeah.
Yeah, you and me both. Well, I wanted to ask you, Julianne, about another type of, I'm going to envelope this question kind of as a two-parter question. So what are the advantages of using canine scent detection services over other methods, and how, and maybe part of that is like the sensitivity part, like does it sense it at the egg stage as well? And can you expand on that point?
Yeah, so they can detect eggs. They can detect bed bugs at any stage. And I don't know what to call it. There's a high success percentage, like a high accuracy percentage, because we train them kind of on all amounts of scent, all different timelines. So from like just a group of eggs to 30 bed bugs and everywhere in between, some that have been sitting there for a couple hours, some that have been sitting there for a couple weeks. So we really, that's how sensitive dogs' noses are. They can actually smell the difference between all of those things. 20 bed bugs is going to smell different than a grouping of eggs. So we have to train them as best as we can on everything. And the benefit from using the dog is they can cover a lot of ground quicker than a person using their naked eye. When a person is in there searching, they can find them if they're there, especially if there's an infestation or there's a large amount. When it gets a little bit more difficult is if there are newly infested and there aren't a lot of them. And also, if, like, for example, if you've got a bed that has those slats or like drawers or cubbies or fabric, it's a lot harder to find them than it is with just like a metal bed frame. You might be able to find them then with the naked eye. But with dogs, they can just, they're more effective in finding them, especially small amounts. Also, they just move through quicker. So if you're doing proactive searching, the dog is just going to, I can search, depending on the size and clutter, you know, 5 to 10 units or rooms in an hour. And usually with a human searching for bed bugs, they have to dismantle a lot of furniture. They have to like take things apart because they can't see into the little crevices of bed frames and headboards and things like that. So the dog is just a better way to go. That's not to say that the human can't find them, because bed bugs will leave evidence. They leave their fecal behind and they leave skins behind. But especially for post-treatment checks, the dogs are perfect for that, because the human's going to see what's left over, dead bugs, skins, fecal. But the dog, if you've done a good enough job as a trainer to train them off of dead, then the dog can tell you if they're all dead or not, or if there are any survivors. But that's the important word there, is that you've done your job as a trainer to proof them off of them. So I'm putting out hides of dead ones and making sure that they're passing those and then going to the live ones instead.
Oh, interesting. So what do they do when they detect a bed bug? Do they stand there and bark, or?
It's called a passive alert. So they're not scratching at it like you would see like in a drug dog type thing.
Right.
Because you don't want them bouncing all the bed bugs around.
No, you really don't.
No, you just want to. So my dogs will sit and they'll generally put their nose on where the source is. They're trained to get to the strongest point of the bed bug smell. So my dog sits, he will sometimes put a paw up, which I, you know, he doesn't do it aggressively. So I just leave it. And honestly, for me as a trainer, I'm not real particular as to how they want to alert. That it's clear to me. So yeah. My newest dog, she's just taken to lying down, and I'm fine with that. I don't really care if that's comfy for you, girl. You do it. You just, as long as that you're being clear to me that there are bed bugs right there, and you're showing me where. So some people don't even have their dogs sit down or lay at all. They just have them stand. My friend and I have a peer friend, very close friend in Seattle, her dog just freezes. So whether he's sitting, standing, or sitting, his nose is just on it. And you can pull on his leash and he's like, nope, I'm not moving. But he's another amazing dog. He's a Malinois, actually, a Belgian Malinois. And they say they're the Ferrari of scent detection dogs.
Oh, interesting. That was actually going to be one of my questions. What breeds of dogs do you use, Julianne?
So I have, my first two dogs were mini Labradoodles.
Aw.
Yeah. And when I first started going to these conferences, people made fun of me a little bit because I'm very sweet with my dogs and I definitely treat them as mm-hmm. pets. And, yeah. But they work anyway, despite that. But I was, you know, given some side eyes and some weird looks for my fluffy little Labradoodles, but then aww. They saw them work. Not another side eye, not a word about my Labradoodles. So I definitely like the poodle mixes and I've had really good experiences with that. So my newest dog is, she's a poodle mixed with an Irish setter.
Oh, wow. And that's an interesting mix.
It is. And the reason why I'm keen on continuing with poodle mixes is because of the shedding and hypoallergenic factor. Because I'm one of few dog services that can speak to that and provide that for clients who have allergies.
Right. That's awesome. And actually, that really piques my interest because I have a poodle mix. So I'm very excited to start my new business venture. So Julianne, you might be hearing from me soon about certifying my dog.
Absolutely.
I guess that leads me to my next question. What exactly does the training process involve for the dogs?
Yeah, so the training process, really what you need from a good working dog is that stupid, blind fixation of something. So whether it be food or a toy or, I mean, even love, but it's mostly going to be food or a toy. And they're just so driven by whatever that is. Like that's why beagles can make great scent detection dogs because they've got such high food drive and they're physically built for scent detection. That's why they've got those big floppy ears to create the cones for the scent. But if you can, and the labs also, because you know how labs are with balls. If you throw a ball out the window, the lab's probably going to go for it regardless of of the safety of that. So you really, that's the first key ingredient is an obsessive drive for something. So they'll do anything to have that object. And the second thing is confidence. So they need to be able to be confident around people, around distractions, around different terrains, different situations, closed spaces. They really need to be kind of impervious to distractions. So they're going to be so focused on what they love and then be able to continue that fixation through anything, any obstacle. And so right. if you have those two things, then it's just a matter of it's quite simple. The scent imprintation for a dog is actually probably the simplest part of the whole training process, but you just teach them to associate the smell of their favorite reward with the smell of bed bugs. And you start by pairing the two together so that they start to search for their desired object. And then when they find that desired object, because if you've got a dog that's got high drive for food or a ball and you tuck that ball away somewhere, the dog's going to instinctually just look for it. That's not something.
Right.
And if you have to teach that, then that probably is not going to be the best dog for the job. Mm-hmm. So pairing the two scents. And then after you've done that over and over and over again, you pull the reward and then you'll see that when they come across that target odor, they're going to pause.
Yeah.
They're going to show you some sort of change of behavior. And as soon as you see that change of behavior, you reward with their reward.
Ah, okay. Mm-hmm. It's an association at that point. Interesting. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then you come to like a little bit of obedience, but you definitely want them to be handler independent. You don't want them to be dependent on the handler or look to the handler for permission for anything. So you have to be really careful with it. There's a fine line between too obedient and too wild for scent detection work. Because you're going into people's homes. You definitely want your dog to be appropriate and somewhat behaved, but you also don't want to take the independence away from them to search on their own and not look to you for a thing.
That part in particular seems like it would be like the most nuanced thing to train. For sure. Yeah. And that's really fascinating work too. So it doesn't sound like there's probably some breeds that just generally are better suited because of the two requirements that you talked about, but like, it doesn't seem like it's a make or break situation. Like, you know, because kind of what I was thinking about, something that you would mention is whether that breed is kind of like a more high energy dog that would be kind of distracting to other people who might be on the premise at the time of the detection taking place. So, but that might be more like the personal temperament of the dog as opposed to like a particular breed of dog then, would you say?
Yeah, I would say okay. So. I think that there are definitely breeds that are more fixated on like and genetically driven to work. They just have that work ethic because that does exist in dogs and specific breeds. But I mean, I've got Labradoodles or one Labradoodle and a I call her a pooter, a poodle setter, but. But they've got the drive for the ball and, I don't know. I guess poodles are hunters too, but I've seen beagles, I've seen border collies, I've seen a pit bull. That's not a common one just because for business purposes, people don't want to be using a pit bull because they don't want to scare people. And that's some insurance companies won't cover businesses that use pit bulls, but I've seen a pit bull work beautifully and she worked for praise because she was just a lover of attention and a pleaser. So honestly, like there are definitely typical breeds, the working breeds, but I wouldn't discount other breeds if they've got that drive.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So it's definitely not a deal breaker depending on your, the breed of dog that you were born as. So you have hope no matter who you are as a dog.
Yes. To all the dogs out there.
You're typically not a working breed, but you have aspirations to be in a scent detection dog. It's absolutely possible for you. So
right?
Don't give up.
You can do it.
Anything is possible.
Anything is possible. Well, that's adorable.
Are there ever instances where there are false positives? I would imagine that's like pretty rare, but like, has that ever happened? Is there sometimes like a cross, like maybe some insect or something like that, that smells very similar to the particular subset of bed bug, stage or number that you train the dogs for?
The dog is typically not going to do a false positive based on the odor. It's typically going to do a false positive based on him itself and the training. For example, some dogs are too smart to be doing this. You need to be a little bit, not dumber, but like you can't, some dogs think about things too much. You know, like if I'm moving in closer when he's searching into a spot, like you can sometimes, and you can ask any handler this, you can definitely force your dog into a false alert just by your body language and your intentions and your energy. The dogs that are most likely going to do false alerts are dogs that work in with other dogs. For example, like if you've got one dog, they've gone in, they've put their nose, they've alerted somewhere, they put their nose there or their breath there or their tongue there, and then you have your second dog come in, that some dogs will debate based on training, but like some dogs will kind of think, oh, you know what? My buddy just alerted right there. I'm going to alert here too.
Okay.
So not too much. Or some dogs are just, they're a little bit more handler focused than they should be. And they're pleasers. So they might false alert because they're just trying to make you happy. They're just trying to get their reward. They're bullshitting you.
Yeah.
And then that's definitely possible. So you just do your best as a trainer. Like, it's like people, every dog is different. So you do your best as a trainer to identify these situations and these occurrences and train away from them.
Hmm. Interesting. And you had kind of mentioned this before, Julianne, but you didn't want your dogs kind of getting like too close to the bed bugs because, you know, you don't want them to bring home any bed bugs per se. So how do you, I guess, if you do find somewhere that they alert you that there are bed bugs and then you do find evidence of that, like how do you ensure that they don't bring home any bed bugs with them?
So So I know bed bugs pretty well. Like, they don't jump, they don't fly.
Right.
They usually like to stay pretty hidden. They don't like to be jostled.
Yeah.
And they're pretty lazy. So they're gonna stick to one spot and stay there. So if my dog were to brush up against it, and they don't want to be on fur, for example, like people who actually sell live bed bugs to people like me, handlers who need them for training purposes, oftentimes they'll feed them on animals or rabbits or rats or things like that. But they sometimes will shave the hair off so that it's a comfier spot for the bed bug to feed from. So the hair is a deterrent. The movement's a deterrent. There's really not enough time for it to even get on the dog. But also if there's an infestation, I can see them. I know they're there. Job done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I can hightail it out of there. My dog and I like, are at the door. Good luck with that. No, but
you're right. Yeah.
I don't go in with clean suits and mask and gloves. And I don't really do anything. And I should knock on wood, but luckily I've never, ever brought any bed bugs home. And that's because I'm not sitting on furniture, not putting things down. When we're finding them, I'm verifying my alert, which is also very important to verify your dog's alert. And and then I take a picture, and then I do my report, and that's my job done.
Right.
I love that.
Actually, going back to the false positives, that's something that also handlers should be really careful of, because I don't reward my dog unless I visually see one, because I feel like the effect of rewarding a false alert is worse than not rewarding a real find. So if I don't reward a real find, I can't find it. It's been and gone. But if I reward when there weren't any bugs, I've reinforced false alerting with my dog, and that's way worse. Like, I'd rather pass up on an opportunity for reward any day.
Okay.
Yeah. So when
that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So when we do certifications, because we're not allowed to check to see if we're right in our alert, I don't reward my dog. I carry on and I mark it for my test exam. And then after the exam is done and I have learned that he was correct, I take him back and I reward. But I won't do it even in those circumstances, because it's not worth it. It's not worth it. And that's a huge contributor to dogs that do false alerts, is the reward without verification.
Gotcha.
And one thing that I just wanted to ask about as well was, you did mention that you don't provide elimination services, it's a detection service. But after an affected resident has had the chance to get treated, I think you mentioned that sometimes that you are involved with post-treatment checks to make sure that the bed bugs have been eliminated. Is this typically included, like, as I'm not sure if this is maybe business specific, but is it typically included in the upfront cost of bed bug detection services through dogs?
So it's not included in mine. So if that's something that the pest control company has done on their own, I'm not sure how they bill that. I'm not sure what kind of guarantees they give, timelines, follow-up search with the canine, that I don't know. For me, my billing starts when I arrive on site, and that's when it ends. And if I go to that place again 2 weeks later, I still start my billing and end my billing when I leave. That's for me. I don't offer guarantees or money back or anything like that. There's just too many variables that come into play. Right. So for me, my billing is very cut and dry. Very cut and dry.
Okay.
The only thing I do is I will drop my price a bit when I'm doing repeat clients. And then I'll do things like, for example, I have a couple of clients who travel quite a lot and they discover the dog service. So they'll actually just bring their luggage to me. And I charge.
Oh, fascinating. Okay.
Yeah. And so I'll just charge a minimal amount because they're bringing their luggage to me. I'm searching a couple of bags. It doesn't take much time at all. And they're just, and that's like just their proactive way because they've dealt with it before. They know the dog exists, and it's that peace of mind is priceless.
I have an idea. You should set up a station at the airport.
You know what? Don't think I haven't thought of that. I have thought of that.
Right? Especially when the bed bug crisis is going on in Europe. Yeah. I think a lot of people would use your services, you know, extra, like, I don't know, like maybe 15, 30 minutes and you have peace of mind.
Set up a booth when those internationals are coming out. But I thought logistically, how would that even work? Like, do I stand in a booth with my dog all day? Like, is there a big lineup of 30 people? When I started to think about it that way, because I did think of that. But the other thing that I thought of, but I thought would be, and I haven't looked into the price, but I thought this would be ridiculously expensive, but have one of those at the baggage claim, how they've got those advertisements.
Yes.
Have my advertisement there.
Oh, yeah. That would be smart too. Yes.
Yeah. Do you got bed bugs in your bag? Big question mark.
Right. Yeah.
Well, now you can find out.
Show a huge picture of a bed bug blown up. People are like, oh my goodness. Yes. Yeah. I really need to use the service.
Screaming in the background with a big, like, wide open. Like, make like a horror movie kind of motif.
Yeah. Brilliant business idea, I got to say.
I have lots of thoughts. I'm just, that is my biggest weakness is that side of things, marketing, sales. That's my strength is definitely lies in dogs.
Right. Yeah. And that's the important part of the business. So that's great. Yeah. But speaking of costs and prices, so I know typically this would depend on a lot of different things, but just for our listeners out there, can you provide a ballpark of like how much someone can expect to pay for these services? Like a range or.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So from what I understand from the industry here in Alberta, you can get anywhere from, I want to say maybe 175 at the lowest and maybe not even that, maybe more like 200 to 250. It's pretty much in that range. I charge 225.
Right.
So
okay. That's very reasonable actually.
Yeah, I think so. And that's up to an hour of work. So sometimes it takes 5 minutes. Sometimes it takes a full hour. It really depends on the situation, the size of a residence, or if I'm going to do for property management companies. Like I can usually get, like I said, I can get 5 to 10 done in that hour pretty easily. Mm-hmm. But for pest control companies, I do charge a lower subcontractor rate.
That makes sense. And these are more for ranges for single family homes, just to clarify? Or is it just kind of like all across the board, it would just be around the same, no matter industry?
It's pretty much for just to show up and up to an hour.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Between 200 and two. So the initial, like just to show up fee is going to be the minimum and it's just going to give you up to an hour. We charge by the hour, but whether we're there 5 minutes or the full hour, it's going to be the same price. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
And I know
so
that
some people will be very specific about where they want me to search. And I'll say, listen, I'm here. You may as well just have me search.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah.
That makes sense. And yeah, because I think I'm not sure. I only knew this because of our podcast episode investigation that we had to do, but you know, how they're, you know, behind picture frames or behind outlets, like you mentioned, in the baseboards, like you mentioned, I don't think your average person would know to look there or know that they could even get behind there. So definitely, I think you're looking out for your clients definitely when they insist on just one area that you're like, no, let's just,
Exactly. Yeah. Like it doesn't matter where they are. If you have them, you should try to get rid of
them. Let's just find them. Don't limit where I can go.
Exactly. Yeah.
No, they can be anywhere. And like, sometimes people like, if the conversation is really important because if, you know, a person walks in the house and they find a bed bug on their coat and they've just walked in the front door and they found that bed bug. It is not uncommon for that to be it. But let's say there was a second one and it dropped on the floor. For me to bring the dog in that day or even the next day doesn't make sense because that bed bug needs to then find a home. Find where it wants to settle, and the lack of a better word, because I hate this word for this, but host, that's what they call it, right? So the dog could see a bed bug walking in front of its face, but what the dog looks for with its nose is a scent pool. There needs to be a scent pool, and that's why we talk about the airflow. The temperature of a house makes a difference. Like if I ever search cars, I ask them to run the car a little bit before we come, because we want to, if there is a scent pool to find, we want to give the dog the best chance of finding that scent pool, especially if it's like one or two bugs or eggs. Like we need to, you can imagine how much of a scent pool one bed bug gives off. Yeah, the dog's noses are amazing and they can find it, but we want to give them the best chance because it is still a pretty small scent pool.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
And I know we talked a lot about, bed bugs and scent detection, but I was wondering, Julianne, because I was browsing your website and I was wondering if you could speak to what other services you provide. And you kind of alluded that you do offer some other services. And I saw on your website that you offer dog training services. Could you elaborate a little bit on that and what it would involve?
Yeah, so that's actually not, I know that you'd think that'd be related into scent detection, but it's not. Although I could do that. Like what I've learned in doing this is so much about dogs, and that it's truly what I feel like my gift is working with dogs and people. So I kind of created, and you wouldn't have seen this because you went directly to my website, but I also put up the website, Canine Relationship Coach.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And that's just to connect people with their dogs and teach them how to speak to each other. So it's really just obedience training, but catered to whatever people want. So that's why I left it very broad, because if you wanted to call me up and you wanted to teach your dog to do scent detection, sure. You want to do a board and train? Sure. You want to do our training sessions and teach your dog just some obedience? Sure. I can, I can do a lot of things, most things with dogs. And so I just wanted to add that, because especially with how many people have dogs now, there's so many dogs out there. And I am, because I'm always out there at these, well, I don't really go to dog parks, but I see a lot of dog people relationships and I see a lot of struggles. And goal is just to create that communication and that trust. Because life with dogs can be amazing and you can have 100% trust there, and then you have your freedom, your dog has its freedom, and it's just a beautiful relationship. And that's possible with any dog, but there's just not a lot of dog owners that know that that's achievable, or they don't even know where to start or to end. And it's just all the pulling I see, pulling and harnesses. Oh my goodness. And I don't want to, like, this is not out of judgment at all.
Right.
But you don't need to, that doesn't need to be. It does need to be. So, and I'm a big supporter of tools, and I know that some people don't love tools. But like anything else, if used responsibly and properly, they're game changers, life changers.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the training side of things for me.
When you were talking about yanking on the chain, it kind of reminded me of the Dog Whisperer on TLC, or I don't know what channel it's on, but I think it's funny that you mentioned that, right? Because I think a lot of the common, I don't know if this is a misconception. I don't own a dog myself, but like, I feel like I've seen it depicted on TV before that if you want to show your dog who's boss, then yes, you do have to use some force sometimes, which involves that.
Right.
So it's just really interesting and refreshing to hear your approach about how, you know, if you learn to connect, I guess, I'm not sure if that would be the term, but communicate with your dog on a deeper level, then that might not even need to happen. And so I think that's a really soft way to go about it, but it's just, it's way more humane. And I think it puts like the balance of the power back to the dog, that you're not just the dog's owner, but like, this is your companion. And so I really love the way that you described that, Julianne.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I liked it how you said you're learning to speak to each other, because that's, it's gives off an image of it's very two-way, right? Like you want to learn to interpret like your dog's communication signals and them from you and vice versa. So that's really, like Valerie said, refreshing. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I'm about balance training. And listen, like if you can trust your dog 100% and it listens and it's obedient to you 100% of the time, purely from reward based training and only reward, great. That's fantastic. I can tell you from experience though, that's rare. And it's with dogs, majority of the dogs, you need to be able to communicate to them clearly the right and wrong choices. So I'm not talking about like pain or anything like that, but they need to understand when something is the wrong choice versus something when it's the right choice. So if they're making the right choice, you reward them. If there's a wrong choice, it has to be clear to them that it's the wrong choice. Whatever that method is, it needs to be clear. That's how you create that trust and that communication, is because you've given them clear direction of what's required of them. If you're not giving them clear direction, how are they going to know something is the wrong choice?
Right.
How will they know? And then, so if they continue to make that, choice, then there's something not happening. You're not clearly communicating to them that that's the wrong choice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I love how I can definitely sense your passion with this, and you did, allude to it several times, how, you know, dogs are your, jam, and that you've been around them for quite a while. They've been around you, and with very beautiful relationships. And I feel like we could talk forever about this because it's such a fascinating topic. But I kind of wanted to round it out and kind of have a feeling for where you're going to get to about this, how you'll answer this question with your love for dogs. But what is your favorite part of your job and the business that you've created with canine scent detection of bed bugs?
My favorite part is that, I mean, it's easy to say, well, my favorite part is working with dogs, but it's really getting to know dogs and like, as individuals. So I'm very big on relationships and connection, and also like incredibly fascinated by how different people are. And I've just discovered that goes the same for the dogs. And like, there's no black and white anything with dogs, just like with people. And it's fascinating to get to the root of these dogs and who they are and how they learn and how they adjust and what they need and what works best for them for training and what drives them. Like they're just fascinating little beings. I would even say they're superior to humans because they just love unconditionally.
They do. That's my favorite part about dogs. Yeah.
So that's been my favorite part about it. And with the business side of things, like besides working with dogs, the amount of freedom it's given me to live a completely balanced life and the people it's introduced me to. And like I said, like I'm here for connection 100%. I'm not here to live my life working. I'm here to enjoy my life and go make connections with humans, dogs, animals, everywhere I go, all my life. So I'm incredibly grateful to my brother for introducing me to this. I don't know if I would have come about this way without that, but everything happens for a reason. And this was my path and I love it.
Yeah, that's awesome. I know you've, I definitely can feel your passion as well. And I think that's really amazing that everything, you know, worked out the way it did and things just kind of fell into place. But along with that, just kind of like hearing your motivation and your passion. And you mentioned a few times earlier about connection and how you're here to kind of form these connections with people and with dogs. And I think that's really inspirational. And Valerie and I talk about this all the time, but like having more work-life balance and being able to, you know, not just, I guess, work to live, like not, yeah, yeah. Like not just, I guess,
live to work.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, this has been very eye opening for us. So thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us and to provide, your perspective and to share a little bit about what you do and how you kind of came about, with this business, in the first place. It's been really educational. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much. I really enjoy this. And like you said, I could talk, we could have another hour long conversation. This would be fantastic. I love talking about this. So thank you so much for having me. I was so delighted when I got your email about this.
That's awesome. Thank you.
So thank you so much. And I hope that Edmontonians hear this and know the dog exists. And next time they have a scare or a concern, they know that they can just call a dog service.
For sure. And I'm definitely going to try to spread the word as much as I can about this episode. I think, you know, it's, definitely very informative. And it's also very, very cool that you also have these dog training services as well, because I feel like a lot of people could benefit from that. Something that I hear a lot about is how during COVID, a lot of people got pets. And because we were isolated, not a lot of these pets actually did have proper social interactions. So there's a lot that could be done with training services. I know myself, like, you know, I would love to kind of seek out your expertise and see how I can better communicate with my dogs. So that's really awesome.
Anytime. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wanted to put a call out for that as well, Cecilia, that how Julianne is so – it brings out the mindfulness that's actually required for owning a dog.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's not like just a lot of people.
It's not just about being alpha and like having them listen to you, right?
Yes. So. Or just like they're not just an excessively cute Pomeranian in like an expensive LV bag, you know? Like,
right.
There's actually like a soul in this creature.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about how, Julianne, how you describe like the relationship between, human and a dog could be so much more than what it actually is to a lot of people, but you just have to know that training and have that awareness and mindfulness with it. So I for one have learned a lot from this episode and will also be promoting it just for that aspect alone. Like, you don't have to have bed bugs, but if you want to learn how to communicate with your,
yes,
with your dog,
yeah,
Julianne's your gal.
Yeah, absolutely. Multifaceted. Yeah, bed bugs and also just some proper communication with your dog. So that's really fantastic. And I'm so grateful that you took the time to come speak to us about this. And I'm excited to kind of disseminate this knowledge. So for our listeners, make sure you check out Julianne's company. It's called Seek and Find Experts. So it's her website is www.seekandfindexperts.ca. And you can also follow her on Facebook as SAFE, S-A-F-E Incorporated, and also on Twitter or X, as it's called now, at Seek and Find Experts.
And while you're at it, don't forget to follow our podcast on social media. So our Instagram handle is at It Is Better to Know. Our Twitter is Better to Know Pod. Facebook, It Is Better to Know. We have so many intriguing topics coming up for future episodes, ladies and gentlemen. So by following and subscribing to us, you'll be notified when our next episodes come out. Thanks for listening, and thank you so much for your support.
Thank you.
Thank you.
See you next time.
Are you new to the It Is Better to Know podcast? If so, we want to thank you for listening. We would love to get your feedback to help us get better. Please leave us a quick rating on your favorite app, or even better, leave a review and let everyone know what you think of this show.
Curious Music is performed by Bonsai Mammal, written by Andrew Southwell and Jimmy Harry. The information, opinions, and recommendations presented in this podcast are for general information only and should not be taken as medical advice. As every individual is unique, please consult your healthcare professional for any medical questions. You got me curious.